the Exalted platform, there is so much of love, so much of respect, so much of intimacy, and yet so much of a relationship which is looking so pure, so pure. So the exchange very beautiful to see how they were interacting. And again, Yaman Mataji was glorifying Maharaj in so many wonderful ways. They were describing about the cars they had as when we used to drive some cars as an adolescent, and some things you were talking about the cars and how the wheels broke off and things like that. But she would always tell Maharaj as one who has got lotus glow feet. Lotus glow feet, it was. And I want to remember that beautiful phrase in which she adored her dear godbrother as a person who has this divine lotus feet, whom she called as lotus glow feet.
Thank you, Prabhu. We have a letter from Shyam Sundar Prabhu, which Gaurang Prabhu will read.
This is Shyam Sundar Prabhu's offering. I guess next to Janaki, I have known Yamuna longest of all the devotees. Some of my fondest memories of Yamuna are from our earliest days, the telling of which may shed some light on this one-of-a-kind person you all know as Yamuna Devi Dasi. You have to go back 56 years, when we were both 13 years old. A small junior high school in a small town in Oregon State, to our homeroom class, where a new girl, John Osland, was seated at the desk immediately in front of me. That first day, her black pigtails slid across the desk in front of me, and I couldn't resist. I grabbed one and yanked on it. Now, homeroom class means where you study quietly for your other classes. So silence is the rule. No response. So I yanked again a little harder. No response. So I really gave a tug and she squealed. Immediately the teacher reprimanded her and we became friends, united by humor, the rest of our lives. She was the foil of my antics. If she approved or if I could make her laugh, that became my purpose in life. And especially to make her laugh, maybe at something a little off color, and watch her turn red and hide her eyes, lower her hand over her eyes, and shake with laughter. Then drive it in so hard and unrelenting until she would run from the room giggling down the hall. Do you know this, Yamuna? And gradually we formed a special bond as spiritual pals, never as boyfriend-girlfriend in the usual sense, but as fellow seekers, confidential soulmates. Joni and I began to explore the deeper aspects of life and shared our special discoveries. Her gravity, her deep seriousness, clicked with my craving for the meaning of life. Gradually, we attracted a few others into our little circle. My college mate, super cool Mike Grant, whom you all know now as Mukunda Goswami, my beautiful crazy girlfriend Melanie, who is Malati Mataji now, John's little sister Jan, our little gang of spirit seekers on the edge of the psychedelic age. Malati reminded me of this story about Yamuna a few days back. Joni loved aquariums and raised little fish, but all of her attempts to keep an aquarium seemed to fail. The tanks would thicken with algae and the fish would die. At that time she lived in one house and I rented a house next door to her. So one day I went down to the nearby river, the Willamette River in Portland, Oregon, and caught about 6 or 7 large fish, maybe 12 to 15 feet long, and put them in a bucket of water and brought them to her. Here, Joni, some fish for your bathtub. So she filled her bathtub with water and kept the fish in there for several months, feeding them. Then one day she came to me and said, Sammy, you just got to take this fish back down to the river. I need to take a bath. Of all our early adventures of spiritual seeking, I think this one was the most crucial. In the Christmas vacation period of 1964, Joni and I borrowed a big old car from a friend. It was painted a copper color, so we call it the Bronze Hog. And together we drove from Oregon thousands of miles down to Los Angeles, California, exploring places in between, reading to each other from Kerouac's On the Road, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, reciting poetry, listening to jazz, and discussing the meaning of life. By journey's end, 3 weeks later, we concluded that we must find a spiritual teacher, a master, to unlock for us the mysteries of existence. By summer of 1966, Melanie and I were living in an extremely solitary place, in a fire lookout station on the top of a mountain. We had heard that Mike and Joni had gone to New York City, but had no idea what they were doing. After not seeing any other people for several months, suddenly a car rolled up to our cabin, and there was Joni and Mike. They immediately began to tell us about this Swami they had met in New York, how wonderful he was, the real master at last. The fact that Mike, the strongest skeptic in our little band, was convinced about Bhaktivedanta Swami, that was one thing. But the fact that Joni was convinced sealed it for me. If Joni thought this Swami was for real, I automatically accepted him as my master too, without a moment's hesitation. So to you, Yamuna, I owe my life, an eternal debt of gratitude for bringing me to Srila Prabhupada. Yamuna was always so happy with her special friend, Radhanath Swami, and so full of joy, surrounded by the devotees at Chaupati Temple. She was one of the first pioneers in Bombay, and she struggled so hard in those early days to spread Krishna consciousness in a land that seemed to have forgotten Krishna. Then in later years to know that her deep sacrifices were so richly rewarded with the miraculous Mumbai Krishna conscious community, that meant everything to Yamuna. Yamuna and I knew from the beginning, even in 8th grade, that we were the only two persons who knew this, that life is not accidental, that nothing is coincidence, that friendships formed in the spirit of magic are special. Without talking too much about it, we knew we were special, that only some short time separated us from our special leader, and by magic he would appear. The supreme magician, the magic man himself, the master of all magic, our dearest Srila Prabhupada.
May I ask Brajlila Mataji to speak?
Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sai Bhutale Shri Mati Bhakti Tirtha Swami Tanamane. Namaste Krishna Padaya Prabhupada Shitatmane. Shri Gaura Karuna Shakti Bhakti Tirtha Iti Namane. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sai Bhutale Shri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine. Nivishesha Shunyavadi Pashityadi Shatarine. So, I'm deeply appreciative and really humbled to be in the association of all the devotees here and to have been asked by His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj to share something about Yamuna Devi. It's such a heartwarming memorial. I'm so grateful that I'm not missing it. This morning I was sick and I was thinking, please, Yamuna, let me come and try to say a little something. So somehow, I'm here. Thank you very much, Maharaj. So many wonderful things have been said about Yamuna in terms of who she is as a person, what she's left for us as a legacy. What I can recall in my association with her is the intimate friendship between her and my Guru Maharaj Bhaktitirtha Swami. When we came back from Africa in 1986, this is the initial time when Bhaktitirtha Maharaj wanted to start urban preaching in Washington, D.C. And he, at that time, was not quite sure how that would happen because he really didn't have so much support. Anyway, he requested a couple of us, maybe three of us. At that time, actually, Maharaj, I don't know if you knew this, but Bhaktitirtha Maharaj had sent myself and Yashoda Mai to Central America to open a temple, just the two of us, two ladies. And he sent a letter in Washington requesting us to come back from Central America to come back to Washington, D.C., because he wanted to start this urban preaching. And this is when Yamuna came in my vision. She and my Guru Maharaj were really close friends, very close friends. And this manifested many different times, but two times that I specifically remember that friendship was when Ladini left her body, Ladini Devi. And at that time, my Guru Maharaj was really sad because he felt really guilty because Ladini Mataji was preaching in Africa and she, the arrangement was made, of course, through him that she would be in Africa. And so when we learned about her leaving, my Guru Maharaj became very sad and needed support. And at that time, Dina and Yamuna both would come to my Guru Maharaj and spend time talking with him. And they really helped him so much to just move through that period. It was a difficult period. And they just lovingly, as everybody has shared here, lovingly just made themselves available, made themselves present. Even sometimes it was just by phone. But he relished those calls so much, I remember, because it was painful that Ladini Devi had left and had left all of our association. So Yamuna and Dina, they were very visible at that time during a period when we were pioneering this preaching center called the Institute for Applied Spiritual Technology. And it was also during this period that my Guru Maharaj went through another difficult time. And again, Yamuna Devi and Dina were there for him, just by their friendship, just this friendship manifested in so many ways. One of the ways that they showed their friendship is they had a place where they stayed in Washington, D.C., and there's a devotee, his name is Bhakta Henry. Bhakta Henry, he facilitated so many of Srila Prabhupada's disciples. He had a huge house in Washington, D.C., and anyone that would come any of Srila Prabhupada's disciples that would come, he would make all the arrangements for them, and he would lovingly care for them, as you do here in Chaupati, for Srila Prabhupada's disciples. And so we were starting out very humbly in a very small place. It was really a one-room place. And there were four devotees living together in that place with His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. So we really couldn't do much in terms of programs. And Yamuna Mataji would offer the place of Bhakta Henry for us to come sometimes to bring the devotees that were coming, newly coming to Krishna consciousness. And so one of those times that I remember, at that time there were about maybe 20 devotees that had started coming to the preaching center. These devotees had no knowledge about Krishna consciousness at all, whatsoever. And So we were introducing them to consciousness. And Jamuna Mataji was always so enthusiastic about this type of preaching. She was so supportive, and she was always calling us, okay, can you bring the devotees, and will the devotees be come over like that? I think there's something with this mic. Thank you. And so that one time, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj said, okay, arrange for the devotees to go to this house of Bhakta Henry's. And Yamuna Mataji had offered to cook for all the devotees, about 20 devotees. And so His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj didn't come with us, and I was the person that was caretaking the devotees at the time. So I was the one that brought all these 20 devotees to be with Yamuna and Dina Tarani. And I remember she cooked and prepared amazing lunch prasadam with her own hands, as she lovingly would for so many, many, many devotees. And this particular time, we went there many, many times, but this particular time, she served a dessert. And the dessert was a cake. And the cake was looked like chocolate, but at that time, no one ate chocolate at that time. And so she served the cake. And so one devotee came to me and said, Rajalila, this is a chocolate cake. And I said, come on. I thought at the time the devotees are being a little bit offensive. And I said, how can you even think that? No, of course, Mother Yamuna would never, ever serve us chocolate. You know, this is new devotees, you know. They think like this and like this. It was, come on, why would you think she would do that? And so then another devotee came to me and said, I just came out of the material world. I know chocolate. And I said, this is not chocolate. I'm telling you, this is not chocolate. And I was so disturbed that they would even think that Yamuna would give them chocolate. And I remember going back to our institute, and of course Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj called me and said, so how did it go? What happened? He was always eager to hear how the devotees responded when his god brothers or god sisters would embrace them. And so I shared with him, everything went really well, Maharaj, except, you know, these devotees, they were like caught thinking that Yamuna served chocolate cake. And he said, that is ridiculous. How could they think like that? And I said, yeah, I had the same sentiment. And so he said, you need to speak to the devotees and like this. And I said, okay, Maharaj, we'll talk to the devotees. And so a few days later, we had a chance to go back to her home for some reason. I don't remember. Something was happening. This time, though, it was just myself. And I believe it was just myself, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, and someone else. And maybe it was like a Ekavira Prabhu. I don't remember. Anyway, I took the opportunity, because I've been trained to always be a little outspoken. Sometimes it's not the best thing, but sometimes. So, sorry. So I asked her, I said, Jamuna Mataji, with a straw in my teeth, I want to ask you a question. And she looked at me, she said, did I do something wrong? And I said, no, absolutely not. No. She was always so humble, and she always thought that she was doing something to disturb devotees. She always thought like that. And I said, no, absolutely not. And she said, what, did something happen? And I said, wow. I said, everybody enjoyed the lunch so much. It was so delicious. And I said, and the cake especially was so good. I said, I'm wondering, what was the cake made from? That must be really good carob, something like that. And she says, it wasn't carob. It was chocolate. I said, chocolate? She said, yeah, we always serve proper chocolate. I mean, I serve proper chocolate on the train. And I said, oh, Krishna. I said, so then I didn't know what to do. She says, was that wrong? And I was, I don't know. I don't know, you know, like, because this is Jamuna. How could I say this is wrong? So I remember that, and I just remember like saying, no, it's fine, no, it's just, you know, and I remember having to go back, and now this is, you know, talking to new devotees coming and apologizing. So sorry, devotees. Yes, yes, Mother Jamuna, she informed us that, and then my Guru Maharaj was looking, because he never ate chocolate either. And he was saying, that was chocolate, Jamuna? And she was like, yeah, yes. Yes. And so we were both like in amaze. We were like in amazement. And so then apologizing to the devotees. And the devotees were like, we knew that was chocolate. And then later my Guru Maharaj said, but I would still prefer that the devotees don't eat chocolate. And so we actually didn't eat chocolate. But this was just one little pastime that I can remember. And there was so many, many, but because of time, I just wanted to share that one. It stays in my heart about the mood of how humble she was, how serving she was, and how much she always were thinking how to please others and to not in any way cause a disturbance. She was always like that. She was a private person. She never, ever, ever, as far as I can remember, all the way back to 1986, ever wanted to cause a disturbance. Even when she spoke with my Guru Maharaj, many, many times, no one would know so much because she just wanted to not be so visible, not a visible person. And so we were on our way from India to be with Jamuna and Dina, actually, in when we leave from here in Florida, and somehow she's gone back to Srila Prabhupada. But just from the short association that we've had, I know that this is very glorious for her to be with Srila Prabhupada. Extremely glorious. Thank you very much.
Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavdebhyo Namo Namaha. I have to admit, Maharaj, that chocolate cake was the best chocolate cake I've ever had in my life. And as Brajalila was sharing, Her Grace Yamuna Mataji, she used to come to the Institute in Washington on many different occasions before she moved to Washington, D.C. And Bhakti Titta Maharaj used to encourage the devotees and train the devotees, all of us, in a way that was, as he expressed, we want to please our guests in such a way that they feel most excited when they actually leave the Institute. And the success of the Institute will be based upon how these devotees feel after they leave the association of that center. And so Mother Yamuni used to come there, and we would serve her in such a way. And on the last occasion, she came about 3 or 4 times. She said, you know, I was trying to decide where I was going to reside. And because of the love that I've experienced from His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami and his disciples, that I've decided to actually come here to Washington, D.C. And so we were most grateful that Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, by his grace and his influence, she actually came there. We had more association. On one particular occasion, Jamuna expressed that she was moving at a certain time, and we said, we're there for you. Just let us know the time, and we'll have a crew at your doorstep helping you to do whatever you need us to do. And so we were moving the things from the moving van into the home, and she was there directing us, telling us where to put things. And every now and then she would disappear for a few minutes, and then she would come back. And after we finished moving all of her things into the home, She said, come into the kitchen. Now we'll take prasad. And Mother Jamuna, she was an amazing, I mean, to say she was an amazing cook is an understatement. She was extremely empowered. And she said, this is a new recipe. So we're going to try it out on you guys. So come. So please come in. And on all occasions when she made a preparation, it was just so beautiful. I mean, just as we look at Radha Gopinath and we see how attractive they are and how beautiful they are, and they make the ornaments and the clothing look more attractive and beautiful. When she would place things on the plate, the prasad, the plate would look attractive. You would say, is this plate edible? I mean, it would just, I mean, everything, the colors, it was just a picture of exquisite beauty. They were culinary masterpieces. And I remember one god brother and I, we were looking at the preparation. We said, I don't really want to, I want to honor this, but I don't want to eat it. This is something that we should put on the altar and offer incense and artik to. And all of her preparations was like that. And I remember I was a heavy eater at that time. I had a heavy appetite. And she put so little on the plate. And I remember thinking, I said, I need another plate at least one. And but the prasad was so tasty that, I mean, it was so filling and so satisfying. And that was because of the love that she put into everything that she prepared. And so we were separate from Jamuna and Dinatarani Mataji's for many years, and we only had communication by email or letter during the time that His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Maharaj was departing. And then His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Maharaj, he gave me an instruction to go to the Holy Dham and take shelter of the Holy Name. And so I was in Sridham Mayapur, both Rajalila and I, in 2010, January 2010. And I remember paying dandavat in front of His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Swami's samadhi. And I prayed to him to actually help me to follow this instruction and take shelter of the Holy Name in a way that it's pleasing to him. And I got up off of the ground, and then there was a devotee standing there. And I didn't know the devotee. And the devotee said, are you Ekavira? And I said, yes. He said, I have a message from Jamuna. She has a kirtan group, and she would like you and Rajalila to come and participate in this kirtan group, and it starts in 2 days. And so I said, wow, this is really quick. I just made this prayer, and as soon as I got up, this devotee was standing here. And so we participated in this group. And I remember it was a very small, intimate gathering, approximately 12 devotees. And Mother Jamuna spoke before everything began. And she expressed how important the prayers of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur are. And she expressed how Srila Prabhupada emphasized that she should learn and study the prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And then she gave certain pastimes with Prabhupada and how he expressed that no one writes prayers like Narottam Das Thakur and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And she talked about how he used to just sit on the porch and just chant a line over and over and over again for an hour or so and just reflect on Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And so she said for years she didn't really take that instruction very seriously. But then she started to take it seriously. And she studied the prayers. And then she started encouraging other devotees to study the prayers. And she formed this kirtan group. And when we came into this kirtan group, I had the experience that when a person had a kirtan group, that they were the main person. They were the ones that were actually chanting and leading the group. But in her kirtan group, she had so many devotees that had talents. They were amazing chanters. Devotees doing the yoga programs throughout the world, chanting in different yoga studios. 24-hour kirtan devotees from Vrindavan. Many devotees, and they were so talented. But there was one particular devotee that was leading, and he had such a simple voice. And I was talking to Mother Yamuna after the program one time when we were in Mamgachi, and she was expressing that his name was Kartamisha Prabhu. Said that he has a very simple voice, nothing special, but he does something that is quite unique. He chants without the ego. He does what's called egoless chanting. And so therefore, that's the reason why he's the leader of our kirtan group. And so when she addressed the gathering, she expressed, I'd like you to make a few commitments. One is to actually be here. If you're starting today, to be here throughout the duration of this program. It will last for at least 2 weeks. And we will chant from 6:30 until 9 o'clock. And she expressed that we would like you to be here on time, to be punctual. All of the devotees' time here, it's valuable. And we want to start on time and end on time. And she expressed that we would like you to chant from your heart, to fully participate and give your all while being here. The kirtan leader is very important, but even more important than the kirtan leader are those who are actually participating in the kirtan, hearing the kirtan and responding to the leader. And then she said, we'd also like you to leave your chappas and ego at the door. Leave your shoes and your ego at the door. And she just had an amazing combination of the love of a mother, the gravity of a warrior, and the simplicity and ease of a child. And that simplicity was such that it encouraged people to approach her. She was so approachable and so loving. And many of the devotees said so many wonderful things. She was extremely funny. She had a keen sense of humor. We all at the Institute referred to her as Mother Yamuna, and we saw her as our mother, even Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. And whenever I would respond to or speak to her, I remember again in Mamgachi, I asked her, I had a question. I said, Mother Yamuna. And she turned to me and she said, yes, Father Ekavira. And that wasn't the first time she did it. And I said, oh, she got me again. And that was the only time she called me Ekavira. Whenever I called her Mother Yamuna, she called me Ekavira or Father Ekavira. The other time she called me Eka. Yes, Eka. She always had a little nickname for the devotees. But she was so loving and wonderful. And her chanting, the devotees talked about her chanting. During that time at Mamgachi, the devotees, she was having difficulty walking. And when the devotees got off the boat, she said, you all go ahead, I'm just going to sit here. And so everyone got off the boat, and she said, Eka, go ahead, go with the devotees. And I said, no, it's okay, I'll stay here. And she said, no, I want you to go with the devotees and have darshan. I said, yes, that's why I'm staying here. I want to have darshan with you. And one other Mataji stayed back. And she said, no, you should go. Go have darshan. And I said, Mother Yamuna, you know, we could sit and chant. And then a huge smile came on her face. She smiled from ear to ear. She said, yes, let's chant. Let's sit and chant. And then we just sat and we chanted. We chanted Japa. And when she chanted Japa, it was just such an amazing experience because she would have such a relationship with the holy name. It, as the devotees expressed, tears would well up in her eyes and run down her face. And then she would just break out into a kirtan. And we start chanting in kirtan. And then she'd go back into chanting the japa. And then she'd start singing the japa. And she just had an amazing relationship and relishing the holy name. And so I know I'm taking quite a bit of time, but I just wanted to express the wonderful qualities and some of the experiences that we've had with her and encourage all of us and how she was trying to encourage all of us to take shelter of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayers and take shelter of the holy name. Her Grace Jamuna Devi Ki.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Prasketa Resatanive Panchakalpatribhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanang Pavinibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Yamuna Devi was, since my very introduction to Krishna consciousness, played a very vital role. My first meeting with Srila Prabhupada was in Surat in December 1970, and that was also my first meeting with Yamuna Devi, who was on that first party, along with her husband Gurudas, Shamsundar Prabhu, and Malati Mataji. So many of those early devotees were there. And I remember she was one of the main ones who encouraged me in Krishna consciousness and made friends right away. And I was, most of the devotees kind of ignored me, and I can understand why. I was a karmi out of, you know, New York City at the time, mustache, long hair. So that was understandable. But Yamuna Devi and Gurudas Prabhu also were very warm and just appreciated that I was there. And, you know, the circumstances, it wasn't really my plan to come initially, but that developed. And I remember in Surat, there was one astrologer who came one day. And Srila Prabhupada said, let's have some fun. So he invited the astrologer in. I think he was a palm reader. And he looked at several devotees' hands. And he looked at one Maharaj, actually not Maharaj, Brahmachari at that time, and said he will become a sannyasi, but he will fall down. And so that particular person said, this astrologer is bogus. Then he looked at Yamuna Devi's hand, and he said that this devotee will become as famous as the Yamuna River. So certainly that's come to pass, I believe. Just hearing the appreciation and love for the devotees. Everyone she touched had a great impact. She had a great impact on. And our paths seem to intertwine many, many times in the past 30 years. She and Dinatarne Mataji were always looking for an ideal place to stay, to really settle down. And she went to quite a few places. She went to England. They both went to England. They went to New Vrindavan, where we were neighbors, actually, for about a year and a half. And Washington State, Oregon, quite a number of places in say 20 years. And then while they were in Washington State, Dinitarani Devi was invited by the devotees in Sharanagati to come and visit. So she went and she liked it very much. But she didn't want to tell Yamuna Devi that she liked it very much. She wanted her to see for herself. So one day Yamuna drove up by herself. And as you drive up to Sharanagati, actually it looks very, very barren. You go from a very lush Vancouver rainforest to high arid desert. But then when you come up and over into the valley, it's a very beautiful sight. There's a couple of lakes and very green grass during part of the season. She was there at a very nice part of the season. And it wasn't the scenery that struck her, but when she drove into the valley, she describes that she felt that the holy name resides here. And that was her call to move to Sharanagati. So she moved to Sharanagati, I believe, in 1999, and we, no, sorry, 1997 or 1998, and we came in 1999. So she was our next-door neighbor for 11 years. And I can honestly say that I did not take advantage of her association as much as I could have in my, you know, filmmaking and travels. It was not always possible to be there, but even when I was there, I certainly could have taken more advantage, and I deeply regret that. But she had a tremendous impact on five girls in the valley. She called them her milkmaids. And one of them was my daughter, Haripriya, and two were next-door neighbors. One is Gopal, and the other is Kalindi. And then two twins in the farther end of the valley, Rasa and Kava. So Yamuna Devi actually took them under her wing, and she trained them in deity worship, cooking, and bhajan. On and off for about 8-9 years. And those girls are gems. They really have been transformed. We talk about, Maharaj mentioned the idea of transformation in Krishna consciousness, where every opportunity thing we experience is an opportunity for transformation. So these girls have become wonderful devotees, and it's wonderful to see Yamuna Devi's tremendous potency in giving Krishna consciousness not to everyone she met. And we hear that today so amazingly. So unfortunately, when she left, that was a great loss for the whole valley. The girls were especially crushed by her departure. But they did manage to go in, I think, late November of this year to visit both Yamuna Devi and Dinitarani Devi in Florida. Unfortunately, Haripriya was not able to do that. She was in Mayapur. But she did receive two emails from Yamuna about a week before she left. And unfortunately, she could not be on email that much, so she was not able to answer. But Yamuna Devi, as she was, you know, reaching out to devotees here in Chaupati, some of the staff at the hospital, she was also reaching out to the girls. So we're deeply sorrowful at her departure. And it's just wonderful to be here with so many of those whose hearts she touched. Hare Krishna.